Welcome. And most, but not all of you were in the last quarter. It's natural from time to time, I suppose I'll be referring to things that we did in the last program. But mostly, this program stands by itself. We're going to be talking, looking, investigating, exploring, inquiring into the role that thinking plays in our way of making sense of the world in our day-to-day experience. And I think one of the things that comes up very clearly in TSK is that thinking is there's more to it than we imagine. People who have experience with meditation or just have developed some habit of looking at their own inner experience will realize that there's a lot of thinking going on. When I teach meditation classes at the Nyingma Institute, I sometimes give people the practice of counting the number of thoughts that they have in a certain period of time. And sometimes people report back that they don't have many thoughts. And that may be the case because people are really different. It's one of the things that I reflect on more and more, that people are really different. Okay. We're getting a little echo here. Did somebody do something to create that? Are we okay now? Seems like we're okay. Okay. People are really different, so maybe when people report that they don't have many thoughts, that is in fact the case. But I tend to be a little bit suspicious because, in fact, as you become more experienced in looking at your mind, you see a kind of steady stream of thoughts going on. And that's part of what we want to look at, but it's only the very, very beginning of what we want to look at because what we want to explore here is the nature of thinking and. Really, the suggestion is that there's a lot of there's a lot of thinking going on that we may not think of as thinking, that we may not label as thinking, but if we start to look closely, we'll see it as part of what we want to look at. Now, before we started this course about a week ago, I guess, or 10 days ago, I sent out a little notice saying that I wanted to change the way we were going to do the course, and one of the reasons I wanted to change it was to try to encourage more interaction in these phone calls. But actually, that's just a means to an end. The end is the goal here is that you really be looking at your experience, not only when you set aside formal time to do that, but that you really that we focus the inquiry, that we focus this program in such a way that the opportunity for inquiry is always there, and you're not going to take advantage of it, 24 hours a day, although that would be nice. But the idea is to encourage people to really be looking at their experience. And thinking is something that you can look at in your experience very easily because, in fact, there's a lot of it going on. When you decide to focus in, you can see it. Okay, so we're going to spend some time today looking, taking time and to look at our thinking. But I do want to set it up, and so today I'll probably talk more than I expect to in later programs. As you know, the readings are very short. In this program. And the reading for today is essentially the first 2 pages of Chapter 7 of Dynamics, Thought Forms in Space. And that's also the reading for next week. So we're going to work our way in slowly. And today I'm mostly going to focus on these first two paragraphs on page 51, and actually on the title. Of the chapter, and that's where I want to start. The most of you or many of you may have noticed or thought about the fact that the title is a play on words, because it could mean two different things. It could be kind of a noun phrase, I guess, saying or naming thought forms in space. So in space, we find these thought forms, right? But the other way of understanding the title is to treat the word forms as a noun, so that the title is a whole sentence, thought forms in space. And those two ways of looking at it, one of which is kind of in the past tense, you know, something has been done, a thought form has taken shape in space, and it's kind of a product of an activity, this thought form. And we want to look, we want to understand the nature of these thought forms. So that's one way of understanding the title. The other way of understanding the title is that the topic for the chapter is how thought forms in space. And really, we want to look at both of them. We will probably, well, right now I guess we're going to look at the kind of focus on the idea of thought forms, things that have taken shape in space. And that is where the text starts off, I think. So what Rinpoche says in this first paragraph, first of all, the chapter arises in the context of a discussion of space. And you might want to go back and read everything, you know, the first 50 pages that lead up to this chapter. That certainly would be helpful and useful, and many of you, I'm sure, have done that reading at one time or another. But we don't need to do it. I think to the extent that there are references back, I'll talk about those as we come to them. But the basic context of space is important. And the idea here that space offers freedom, that's the very beginning discussion, right? Space and the freedom it offers. So in what sense does space offer freedom? Well, again, that's been discussed in the book so far, but it's easy to understand, I think, in a kind of a straightforward way, even if you just think of space as being empty. Which is not how TSK really talks about space or investigates space. But even if you think about space as being empty, you say, well, in an empty space, there's infinite potential. Anything could enter space. And space is ready to receive anything. In our ordinary way of saying, understanding, we would say space is ready to receive any object, any material object, because we think of space as being material. And that may be a limitation, but we don't need to worry too much about that. Just kind of the flavor of the idea that space is ready to receive anything. And that's the freedom that space offers. And what Rinpoche says in this first sentence, he says, space and the freedom it offers are available at the center of present experience just as it is. If we do not discover space in our experience, it is because this space availability has been covered over. Okay, so here is our present experience. And the way we think about experience is kind of a big topic, but the way we think about experience, the way we usually make sense out of it, is that there's all sorts of events happening in our experience, and there's all sorts of objects that we're in contact with. And they may be physical objects like tables and chairs, or they may be mental objects, and like, say, take a memory. That's a pretty easy example. So that's what's usually going on. That's our ordinary experience, right? And what Rinpoche says is that even though there's all this stuff going on in our experience, there's events and things, objects, both mental and physical, nonetheless, space remains available within that. And again, in the common sense way, you could say, well, that's true. If an object takes up space, if you have a vase sitting on a table, the space in which the object exists is still available. It's still there. It hasn't been affected by the fact that right now there's something occupying it. It doesn't disappear when the object shows up. It remains there, but it's not exactly available. Okay. So on a physical level, we don't care so much whether the space that is available within an object, sort of the space that makes it possible for the vase to be there. On the physical level, it doesn't seem to be too important to us whether we have access to that space, or you could say in some sense we do have access. But if we think of space as more just this open availability offering a kind of freedom because of its infinite potential, then we would like to have access to it. And what Rinpoche says is, well, we do. That freedom, that space is available. But we don't discover it. We don't have access to it because it's been covered over. So it's like saying you have the vase on the table, and because your focus is on the vase, you're not tuned in to the space that makes the vase available. It's not interesting to you. It's not, and because it's not interesting, it's not accessible. So that raises the question, what makes space interesting? What would make space available to us? But the way the text goes is actually the opposite. It says, why is it that it isn't available to us? Right? And the last sentence in the paragraph, and the one that's going to lead us into the question of thinking, is an answer to that question. To recover space presence, the presence of space, right, we must clarify the operation of the thinking mind. Why? Well, because the thinking mind's active naming and identifying, sorry, let's say that again. The thinking mind is active. It names and it identifies. And that naming and identifying structure a world in which space has disappeared. So the thinking and identifying of, excuse me, the naming and identifying in which the thinking mind engages are what cover over space. And that's really a kind of fundamental theme. I was telling someone yesterday about this class and what our theme was, and she said, well, thinking, that's pretty boring. Why would anybody want to look at thinking? Now, I think she was kind of playing devil's advocate because she's someone who's familiar with TSK, but the answer is that we need to understand what's covering over space. We need to understand why space is not available, because as we understand that, and I'm just making this claim, as we understand it, in fact, space does become more available again. So that's why we're doing this kind of inquiry, and that's what the text says. It says we have to clarify the operation of the thinking mind. So let's take a look at, let's take a look, let's see, I don't want to, I said we'd be doing more discussion, so I don't want to go too far, too much further in this direction. I could spend the whole time we have together just talking about these first two paragraphs. Let me not do that. Let me just first stop and see if there are any questions or comments about that so far. Yes? Nope. Okay. Remember that, and some people seem to find this easier, you can always make a comment or question in the chat section of this, of the web page down there. Okay, so the second paragraph basically invites us to do some exploration. And it says, although thoughts often come and go as a kind of reflex, passing so quickly that they go unnoticed. Well, that's a claim that we might investigate, except it's hard because it tells us that we don't notice them. But in theory, that's something we could investigate. So, although thoughts often come and go as a kind of reflex, if we take the time to focus on the stream of mental events. So that's, for our purposes, we can just say thoughts, the stream of mental events. If we take the time to focus on the stream of mental events, we soon observe that we are almost always thinking. So that is an invitation to investigate, right? If we take the time, so let's take the time to investigate, we'll find that we're almost always thinking. That's what I want us to look at, but I want to guide that investigation just a little bit. So first of all, I think the practice that we want to do is we want to have a kind of a foil, a counter to thinking. In other words, we'd like to be able to notice when a thought comes up, and in order to do that, we would like to have a kind of neutral background that is not thoughts. So let's make our neutral background sense experience. So it might mean focus, you know, just looking. It's not very strongly focused, but the idea is that we will be aware of sense experience, sound, feelings in our body, sensations, sights, looking around the room or focusing on one object. You can be completely freeform about this, but just keep it focused in the realm of the senses. And that's going to be our neutral background, sense experience. And then against that, thoughts will come up. And there's two kinds of thoughts, and this is really the point that I want to suggest to help focus the practice a little bit more. One kind of thought, which is the kind of thought that we are used to, and you know, when we talk about thoughts, this is, at least a lot of the times, this is what we have in mind. They're kind of distracting thoughts. So here we are, we have this neutral background of our sense experience, and then a thought comes along. And it takes us away from sense experience, right? So suddenly, we're thinking about something we have to do this afternoon, or something we're looking forward to doing this afternoon, or something that happened yesterday. Typically, thoughts have to do with the past and the future, not always. So that's what I mean by distracting thoughts, and that's one kind of thought that comes up. The second kind of thought, which is one we're less used to noticing, although sometimes we do, is a thought about the content of our experience. So let's say I'm looking in front of me and there's a chair in front of me. And I look at that chair, so that's the sense experience, and there's kind of a commentary, a running commentary about that chair. You know, I think about the color of the brown and decide whether I like it or not. I wonder how many other chairs there are like that, because here at Rotten Ling, that's a question. I wonder, because I actually don't know right now, whether I'm sitting in the same kind of chair, and then so I wonder about how comfortable that chair would be, or it reminds me of some other chair, or maybe I was involved in buying the chair. I wasn't in this case, but then I kind of reflect on that buying or remember in, you know, kind of an indirect way. The point is that there are a lot of thoughts which don't take us away from the sense experience. We're still kind of generally focused on what's in front of us or what's part of our sense experience, but it's also not the sense experience. It's a kind of a cloud of thinking that surrounds the center of the experience. So if you thought it was like an atom, at least one model that we have these days for atoms, you'd say, well, there's the nucleus, and then there's kind of a cloud of electrons around it. So you'd say, well, the sense experience is the nucleus, and the cloud around it is thinking. So those are two different kinds of thinking. They're really quite different, because one leads you into its own world, And the other, you could say, just leads you away from the immediacy of the sense experience without substituting anything for it. So what I'd like us to do at this point is take about 5 minutes to investigate that relationship between the immediacy of experience and our thinking. So with these two kinds of thoughts in mind. Is that clear? Okay, then let's do it. I'm going to turn off the video. 5 minutes. Okay, let's come together. In theory, these classes are structured for 30 minutes. We've been doing that for a long time, and we've tended to go over. And I think I'd like to make that a little more formal. Just figure we'll typically go at least 35, maybe 40 minutes, especially because we're going to be doing more practice and hopefully discussion. So, who would like to say something about your experience in doing this practice, looking at your thoughts?
Jack, this is Linda, and
Yeah.
I noticed two things. I was kind of more curious about the second kind of thought than the first, because that kind of discursive thing that we follow, it isn't so interesting in a way, I guess. But the second kind I wasn't, I was kind of more curious about, and I noticed two things that seemed like two different kinds of, I don't know, sensations or whatever, but might have been related or whatever, but one was just the second kind being some level of emotion like irritation, or could even be some kind of happiness or something, but it was seemed like more of an emotion that was distracting, but not a thought, not a logic or anything. So the second kind seemed to be just as I'm looking, let's say, and seeing a tree, there's this insistence on I don't know how to say it other than this kind of thought of the Buddhist skandha of perception. There's this insistence on definition of some sort, that experience has to be sort of, things have to be parsed out in either auditory or visual, in the case of my experience. And that almost seemed like driven by emotion, this insistence on parsing out experience into dark and light, or sound and not sound. So those were kind of my observations.
Okay, well, those are both very interesting. The connection between thought and emotions is something we're going to want to be looking at as we go along. Because you might say, well, what's the motivation? And notice that motivation and emotion are related words, and they both have to do with movement. So you could say, what moves us to have a thought? Well, it seems like there's a connection between the thoughts and emotion, and that they emotions are kind of the moving force. So as you say, something like irritation or enjoyment or something like that, and whether there are words that go along with that, say, well, that's an irritating, let's say you notice a dead leaf on that tree, and you're a little bit irritated about that. The emotion is there, but there is also a thought. Now, one of the interesting questions we can look at and will look at is, do thoughts have to be in words? But I'm suggesting right now that at least there's a flavor. It's like you're noticing, say, oh, there's a dead leaf on the tree. You don't say it in words, but it still seems to count as a thought. But we'll look at that. I think I'll leave it at that and ask other people. Anybody else want to say anything?
Hi, Jack. This is Hayward.
Hey, Hayward.
What I noticed was that there was a certain freedom of attention, that the attention moved to the thought, and then since the assignment was to pay attention to the senses, I could move, or the attention moved back to senses of touch and temperature. And then what became increasingly aware of was that there was the freedom of this attention to move from thought to sensation. Then the attention got drawn back, but that there was another element of attention that seemed to be able to move back and forth between experiences.
Okay, so it's interesting you use the word freedom. Would you say that you were free to move back and forth, or was it more like kind of, something moving freely, but not
It was like
necessarily. Yes?
freedom had to be there in order for the event to occur.
Okay.
I guess it's like the space, there needed to be room for that movement.
Right. It's one of the
Allowing.
things. I'm sorry to interrupt. It's one of the things Rinpoche points out about space that I was kind of suggesting earlier. You know, although we tend to think of space as confined to the physical realm, in order for something to occur, in order for this going back and forth between sensation, let's say, and thoughts, it seems as though space has to allow both possibilities. So that does have to do with what he calls here space freedom. That seems right to me, or the freedom of space. Okay, anybody else?
This is Michael. I found it sort of discouraging to think that all my activity that I could observe is sort of like this stuff going on that's covering over space, but that I don't really believe in space. It seemed like a very welcoming thing.
You don't believe in it as a welcoming thing? Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
If I can't know it, then, I mean, my means of knowing are tedious, but if I can't know something, I'm not attracted to it.
Right. Okay, well, that's interesting, and you know, I don't actually want to be talking so much about space in this program, but I don't know, we'll see. It may well come up, and I'm not opposed to it. It's just that I want to keep the focus on thoughts, but the point you make is important. You know, if this model that says, oh, if only we had access to the freedom of space, things would be so different. You know, if there's something in you that resists that and says, I'm not interested in space, it's not something that's appealing to me, then that description is not going to be so helpful. You know, maybe one way to think about it is if we look back at this exercise that we just did, a very simple exercise, but you're focused on the senses. And then there's this sort of thought covering, which is what Rinpoche says. You know, basically, the activity of the thinking mind covers over. So he says it covers over the availability of the freedom of space. But maybe another way to think about it is to say it covers over the ability to experience with immediacy what's going on. Because instead of having your experience, you're caught up in the comment on the experience, and that's the cover. You know, it's like thought has this steady stream of experience. It's a little like, you know, if you're watching a sports event on television, or maybe I don't know, the in a way the best example that comes up is if you're watching figure skating. It comes up for me. I used to enjoy watching figure skating on television. And a lot of times they actually, the commentators would not speak during the performance, but sometimes they would. And sometimes you would say, well, you know, shut up already. I mean, just let us appreciate what we're seeing. Or it's as though you were listening to music. And somebody was sitting next to you and constantly commenting on the music. And that is the difficulty with thought. It covers up. And whether it's covering up the availability of space or the freedom that space offers, which is what Rinpoche is suggesting here, or is covering up the immediacy of experience, maybe that's a more helpful way to think about it. That's all I'm suggesting. Now I see that there's a comment here from Ari, and she says, when the focus is on sensation, thoughts are more peripheral and malleable. Well, those are two different things. I mean, I think it's probably right to say that thoughts are more peripheral. It's interesting to ask why, or in what sense would they be more malleable? That is, I'm trying to think of the right verb. There's no such verb as malleating. Who's forming them? Who's shaping them? Who has that power? That's a question, just something to look at. Okay, well, that's a starting point. I think what I'm going to do in terms of the orientation for next week is I will suggest some things you might want to look at, but this is the basic thing you might. The basic practice, you could say, and really very fundamental for what we're doing. We just want to get familiar with the process of thinking and look at, when are we thinking, when are we not thinking, and keeping in mind these two possibilities for thinking, the distracting thought, and let's call it the commenting thought. Okay, Bruce did just post a chat here. Let's see. Okay, sometimes the thought pulls you, okay, and sometimes experience, right, there's a reminder thought. Yeah, that's interesting. There's a reminder thought to return to sense experience. Well, I'm not going to try to comment on that. I just raise the question, what's the nature of that reminder thought? Just keep looking at that. So I think that's a nice observation. What kind of thought is that? Is it a thought? What's going on? I was going to say one more thing, but I don't remember what it was. So during the week, be investigating thoughts. I know what it was. There's kind of a background point to keep in mind here, and maybe it's so obvious that it doesn't need to be said, but usually when we have thoughts, we're focused on the content of the thought. I mean, the thought presents itself as just being about something. In order to do this practice, we can't focus on the content of the thought, but just on the activity of thinking, the fact that we're thinking. And of course, there's a content to the thought, or probably, of course, we may want to explore that, but we want to allow ourselves to look at the activity, the experience, the nature of thinking, and that means that we can't get too caught up in the content of the thought. So I think that's pretty clear, but I wanted to make sure. Okay, that's it for today, and reflect some more on these couple of pages, but the main thing is just be looking at thoughts, and for that purpose, I really want to suggest that you keep some kind of a journal. It doesn't have to be anything formal. It could be notes on your computer or whatever. But just anytime you notice something that kind of surprises you or interests you about thinking, see if you can note that. And then, of course, online, that would be a great place to discuss that. Okay, thank you very much. We'll meet next week.